first day of teaching, I received two very helpful pearls of wisdom. The first pearl of wisdom was this. You will have students who are smarter than you. They might not know the material you know. They might not be able to teach the class. But trust me, you'll find out that they're smarter than you. The second pearl of wisdom was, and know the difference between the smart ones and those who are too clever for their own good. And so with those pearls, I went into the classroom with some teacher training. And the first course I was asked to teach actually was on the social encyclicals of the Catholic Church. Having just come out of philosophical studies, I was so excited to talk about all these bright concepts on justice. The text that I was given was titled, Our Best Kept Secret, written by Henry L. Schultheis and DeBerry. And it was an outline of all of these great encyclicals. Alas, at the end of the year, one of the students wrote in his evaluation, why don't you just keep them a secret? What made Our Best Kept Secret and the social encyclicals difficult was because they were abstract in thought. Justice can be very abstract, for example, if you're reading John Rawls' Theory of Justice. But it can also be as simple as the kindergarten rule of distributive justice, I cut, you decide. So trying to invite students into an abstract concept of justice, I often used distinctions and categories to draw them into conversation. And I'll never forget once I was teaching the difference between justice and charity. And so I did it with distinctions. And I said, justice entails obligation. A charitable offering is something you do from your heart. So I had all these examples and I had them guess, which was it? Was this justice or was this charity? So, you know, feeding someone at a homeless shelter or giving money to someone on the street, and many of them checked charity. Paying your taxes or obeying the law, many checked justice. And then there was this one hand that went up in the back of the room. And he said, well, you make this distinction between justice and charity, saying one ought to, justice entails obligation. But what if one ought to be charitable? Don't the two collapse into each other? And then he said, isn't your distinction somewhat facile? I thought, well, I guess you did your SAT prep. Well, in fact, the student was smarter than me. And so after he said that, I looked at him and I said, brilliant. That's the point of the lesson. In fact, it was not. But I said, we can now move on to how the church defines justice. That was an example of one who was wisely smarter. But in that very class, there was someone who was too clever for his own good because he was studying church history, the Council of Trent, justification and grace. And he said, you know, all of these social encyclicals say what we should be doing for the poor in the developed world, whether it's Rerum Novarum or Sententiamus Annus, whether it's Populorum Progressio. They give suggestions for how the church can better people's lives or the world. But in fact, we can't merit salvation, the council teaches us. We can't merit grace as long as we avoid sin and receive God's love. Why do we have to do any of this? This was someone who I deemed too clever for his own good. I was thinking in the back of my mind that the school had, following Father Pedro Rupe, a Men for Others award. And I wanted to say to this student, well, you can subscribe to your theory and we'll give you the Men for Themselves award. Alas, I was not so cheeky in the classroom. But he did ask an interesting distinction. Why do we do acts of love, acts of kindness, acts of charity, if in fact we don't merit salvation, we don't merit grace? And the best answer to that question, which has plagued many throughout the centuries, can be found in the dialogue between Peter and Jesus in today's gospel. In the dialogue, Jesus asks Peter if he loves him. And I think we all remember the symmetry of Peter three times denying Jesus. So there's now the three times affirming what he will do for Jesus. And the back and forth, feed my sheep, tend my sheep, really love my sheep, is what Jesus asks Peter to do. But does Jesus ask Peter because Peter must earn his salvation? Because Peter must somehow merit a place in the future hierarchy or order? No. Jesus asks Peter to do these works of mercy, these works of charity, these works of kindness out of love for him. And the invitation is extended to us as well, that we are similarly to practice our faith with such generosity and compassion and mercy, not to merit anything for ourselves, but out of love for Jesus. Are our hearts so on fire that we want to go out and share what we have with the world for love of Christ? Many of us may know that the synod has come to fruition with Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation, the joy of love, Amoris Laetitia. And the joy of love has gotten much play in the press, because the press is looking for bombshells. They're looking for huge changes. They're looking for sound bites which will redefine Catholic teaching, particularly vis-a-vis marriage. But it's a 260-page apostolic exhortation which invites us all into a deeper contemplation on the fruit and the gifts of married love in the face of human sinfulness and how God's mercy can triumph over all. There's many people who are telling you where to start, because it's hard to just dive into a 260-page exhortation. But the fourth chapter on married love offers a very, very fine pearl of wisdom that is in keeping with this gospel. In that fourth chapter, Pope Francis first quotes St. Paul in that beautiful Pauline message on love, which says, "Love does not seek its own interest. Love does not seek its own self." The Pope then goes on to quote St. Thomas Aquinas in the Summa Theologiae, where Thomas says, "It is more proper to charity to desire to love than to desire to be loved." And then the chapter goes on to show how married life, with its gifts and particularly its failings, can be a model for us to understand the love of which Jesus speaks in today's gospel, and how we live our faith out of authentic Christian love. The candidates and the catechumens who were received into the church are now undergoing a period called mystagogia. This is where they embrace more fully the paschal mystery, and this is a time when they come to an appropriation of their faith in their hearts. But we don't just step back and watch them. It's also a time for us to say, what does it mean for me to be an Easter person? How do I live as one who believes and professes the resurrection, recognizing that the Easter season is longer than the Lenten season? But Jesus gives us a very clear blueprint. If we love Jesus, tend his sheep, feed his sheep, love his sheep, be ambassadors and ministers of mercy in our home, in our workplace, in our community, and we will see in one another and in the world we live, the joy and the fullness of Christ's resurrection.